Welcome to the Mind Meets Body podcast, a space dedicated to real health conversations with a dose of self-compassion, curiosity, and imperfection. Join me, Maria Sosa of Holistically Grace, as we take a deep dive into redefining and exploring health through the mind and body. This week's guest is Dr. Lauren Fogel-Mercy, a psychologist and certified sex therapist practicing in Minneapolis, Minnesota. She specializes in sexual health concerns, relationships, and gender health. She's currently working on her first book about libido. Can't wait to dig in and talk about sex and how it relates to our mind-body connection. Stay tuned. Dr. Lauren, thank you so much for coming on today's show. We're so excited to have you. Can't wait to see all the things that you have to share with us today. I'm truly grateful for your presence. So our relationship is a match made in Instagram heaven. I started following you and kind of reading all the things that you have to share regarding sex. And I thought, this is amazing and interesting because let's be honest, we don't talk enough about sex or how it relates to our health, do we now?
No, this is a perpetual problem in our culture and I think worldwide at this point.
Yeah. And it's so interesting because it's very human, it's very natural, and yet from a social standpoint, it's such a hush kind of thing. And it's something that I think we rarely talk about in therapy as well. You know, I remember couple of my first clients, couples, because I do marriage and family therapy, it was one of those things where they didn't want to talk about the sex they were or were not having. They wanted to talk about their communication. So I kept asking questions about sex and they're like, no, but we're here to talk about our communication. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, but how is this affecting your sex life? And they were so uncomfortable by it. And I'm just wondering what that's like for you as an actual sex therapist.
Yeah, I think that so many therapists, first of all, I mean, it's amazing that you were asking those questions and giving space to discuss the topic in therapy, because I found in my graduate program and my undergraduate program in psychology that so many of my peers were reluctant to talk about sexuality with clients, or they were uncomfortable, you know, themselves talking about the subject. And so that was sort of, I think, early signs for me that this was sort of the path that I was going to go down, because I didn't feel that sense of discomfort with the topic. And so it's so interesting. So when folks come to see me because I am a specialist in sexual health, they are sort of ready off the bat to talk about that. But I do find that as a whole, it's something that we don't talk about as routinely. And even, you know, within the therapy world, it's not something that people are, you know, taught. It's not a lot of, I mean, it's not part of the coursework that we learn as therapists. And yet it's so much a part of, like you said, it's something that we all, you know, might be doing, and it's part of our humanity and our relationships. And a lot of people are not informed about, you know, their bodies and sexuality.
Right. I had one course in sex and sexuality, and again, very basic. And we had actually a sex therapist come in as a guest.
Yes.
As a guest, right? As a guest speaker. And they came in and talked to us, and I was just so amazed by all the things that they were sharing and the way that they were so comfortable with it. And I thought, where's my discomfort showing up, you know, my inability to be listening to these subjects? And it kind of pushed me to take a personal look into myself and my expectations of sex and gender roles, and what is sex supposed to be all about, and how does that inform who I am as a therapist?
Right.
So that's why I ask those questions, because I think it's definitely necessary. So if you ever get the chance, go and talk to marriage and family therapists as a sex therapist, make them uncomfortable, and definitely it's worth doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, for folks who are listening who are therapists, I would, you know, I encourage, you know, including some questions about sexual health in you know, the initial visit and include that mm-hmm. as part of the history, just like any other part of the history. And even just something as simple as that can really help to break down some of the barriers and the stigma that gets attached to it, because, you know, you're already talking about very personal and private things, and sexuality is just one part of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point to make. So I guess one of the things that I wanted to talk to you about was, as it relates to the mind-body connection, because that's what I love talking about here on the podcast, is how do our expectations or our cultural values and the things that we have been taught from a young age about what sex is, what it entails, how much does that play into the disconnect of our mind-body connection?
Wow, this is such a cool topic. I'm so glad that we're talking about this. It's really interesting. So for most of the clients that I work with, we have a lot of unpacking of these messages that we've learned over the years to do, and so much sort of rewiring. There's so much expectation that goes into sexuality. And, you know, most of us are raised in a culture that has sort of given us, you know, sort of unbeknownst to us and not so directly through sex education, because many of us don't get that or don't get a comprehensive version of that. We're just sort of handed down this script of like, this is what sex is and this is how it goes. And it's a pretty typical and traditional flow to it. And it usually involves, you know, step A, B, C. So it starts with like kissing and caressing and then moves into more genital contact. And for a lot of people, it ends with penetration and orgasms. And it's so interesting to sort of sit with people as they discover that, you know, yes, they've been following this script, but that the script is not necessarily something that they signed up for or that they find most useful or helpful for them. And so when we start to sit with that and then sort of, you know, piece apart sort of like, what are the things that actually work for you and what kind of sex do you want and what feels good to you? It really gets people, you know, kind of thinking, and it's an opportunity to get more into your body. Because for so many people, they're just going through steps and they're in autopilot. And a lot of people also struggle with, you know, being kind of really in their heads during sex. And so when we take a pause and actually think about, like, if you were to construct sex based on sort of what you like and what feels good to you without some of those maybe, you know, expectations or the markers that you usually follow, you know, what would that even look like? And what does feel good to you? It's so many people need to spend some time thinking about that and exploring that.
I absolutely love that, that exploration and that tuning in to our bodies, because it definitely seems like sex is a play-by-play kind of book, especially, you know, when we're inexperienced, it's like, oh, well, I do this and then I do that. And this is how relationships progress. We start kissing, we start doing this, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody teaches us. Again, one of the things that I find so interesting about our culture is that we aren't really taking the time to explain sex to kids or to teenagers or to anybody really, but then expect to have these ideal or picture perfect sex lives, right?
Right. And, you know, what ends up happening is because of, you know, with the digital age and sort of the way that people are consuming information now, a lot of people are learning about sexuality mostly through media. And the media is, you know, the basis of the media is for entertainment. It's not for education. And so people are using entertainment as their education around sexuality, sexuality and relationships. And it's just such a disservice to us all when that becomes the foundation of what we know and we don't have anything else to base it off of. which is why we need comprehensive sexuality education, and we need parents to be talking openly and continuously with children about their bodies and sexuality. You mentioned earlier about the piece of like gender roles and how gender kind of shows up in this way. And, you know, there's harm for both men and women due to the lack of conversations and education around sexuality. And that shows up in the narratives that we develop about what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, especially when it comes to sexual positions or how we should be acting in bed, or ladies are supposed to be proper, like the lady in the street, freak in the sheets kind of thing. And then men are supposed to be more aggressive. And then we're like, okay, one, what does that look like? And two, what if I don't really like that?
Right.
Or if my relationship doesn't look like that, now am I wrong? And how do I manage that?
And that's
right?
where sexual shame comes in, when we have, you know, very little frame of reference, and then the reference that we do have doesn't fit for us individually, then we feel really badly about ourselves. We feel, I hear people constantly use words like, I feel broken. I feel like something's wrong with me. So, you know, a large part of the work that I do is normalizing for people, you know, that their experiences are so common and that they're not, you know, off, you know, far into the outlier realm, that, that we all are experiencing similar things. And it just helps to know that, because so few people will speak openly about their sexuality.
Right. I love that. I had a client once who just, it took a really long time for them to open up about what they were really in therapy about. And it was a lot of shame regarding sexual preferences. And the fact that I was able to say, you're allowed to like that, mm-hmm. or you're allowed to feel that way, he just said, that's such a burden that has been lifted off. And the space that you have given for that to be okay is immense.
It's so powerful for some people just to be able to talk to somebody about their sexual thoughts and feelings, and to hear that, you know, how they feel and what they like or what they don't like is really common. And, you know, that that's part of what reduces the shame and stigma parts of sexuality, is, you know, speaking openly about it is part of healing.
Right, right. And do you find that in terms of the clients that you have worked with, that there's been shame based on gender?
There is shame, and it seems to show up differently. And the shame is about, you know, how people feel like they don't fit into the stereotypes or messages that they've received about what they should be doing for their gender. So for example, a lot of women have received messages that they are not supposed to initiate sex, or they are supposed to, you know, have sex for their partner. If it's, you know, a heterosexual relationship, that, you know, sex is for pleasuring the male partner, the husband or the spouse. And some of that comes from, you know, religious upbringing or from family values that we've learned. And a lot of women have not learned sort of how their bodies work. They haven't necessarily been encouraged or empowered to sort of explore their bodies. And it, what really saddens me is when I have adult women, cisgender women coming in and learning, you know, what a clitoris is for the first time as an adult, because nobody ever talked to them about it and they never read about it. And I'm happy to do that work, but it always saddens me that, you know, it took so long or so many years for them to arrive at that place.
Yeah, I hear you. That is so powerful to think about, that these bodies that we carry with us, or they carry us, right? That there's parts that we are so disconnected from that we go our whole lives without knowing and understanding what's going on, or how is their pleasure, or what do we like, or what do we enjoy? And it takes a whole lifetime until we get there.
For some people, you know, all along the way, feeling like something was wrong with them when it was just that they weren't, they didn't have the information, they didn't know, and to discover that. I mean, it's such a joyful thing to watch people discover, you know, that there's nothing wrong and that they have this ability to experience even more pleasure. And, you know, what are the ways to do that? For men, they receive, you know, different messages. The messages are, you know, that boys will be boys and men are just, you know, constantly interested in sex and, you know, able to get aroused really quickly. And they are the ones to initiate sex. And so when men come in and they're struggling with parts of that, they're internalizing that and experiencing shame about that. So, you know, both ways, it sort of creates harm for people when we perpetuate these messages that like all women are like this, or all men are like this, or this is how sex is for everybody. And, you know, when you really think about that and you break it down, how is that even possible that there's one way to do something that's going to work for everyone on the planet? It just, when mm-hmm. you really think about yeah. that, it doesn't even make sense.
Right.
So a lot of the work is really, you know, kind of sorting through the messages that were learned and then working to develop their own narrative, their own story, and, you know, figure out what is it for me, what works for me, and what fits. And, you know, not trying to make myself match exactly with a partner, but to kind of honor and figure out what my sexuality is like. And then, you know, if my partner has a different kind of thing, if their sexuality works a bit differently, then, you know, we can, you know, do some compromise and negotiation. You know, sometimes we might do some of these things that I really like, and sometimes we might do things that you really like.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go back to what you were talking about, men, gender roles, and this idea of boys will be boys and power, and how often that sexual stamina or that way of having sex, which is rough and tough, is kind of embedded within our culture. And then also in terms of impotence, and how if a man is impotent, how that directly plays into their identity as a man.
Yeah, it's a pretty significant impact for men when they're experiencing problems with erections. And first of all, a lot of people, because of the lack of education and information, don't realize that as their bodies age, that their sexuality changes along with other body changes. And so when you're a younger person, you know, sexual functioning and response is a lot quicker and doesn't require maybe as much effort or intensity as it will sometimes require as we get older. And so a lot of people are really thrown off by this. And I think, you know, some of the pharmaceutical commercials have kind of let people in on the secret that, you know, that happens. But a lot of people are not ready for that, or will, you know, really be kind of struck by changes in their body. There's sort of two things that can be happening when there's erection problems. One is that there's a medical issue going on, and sometimes that could be related to medications, or if there's like vascular issues or diabetes, and so and hormones can change over time and decrease, and so it's not a bad idea for people to talk to their medical provider if they're experiencing those concerns. But another piece is that our nervous system has a pretty strong correlation to our ability to get aroused. And so if we are in a really stressed space where we're, from a nervous system perspective, more in a fight or flight or a frozen state, we're not going to be able to get aroused. And that's just how our bodies work. It's like a gas and a brake pedal. You can't operate both at the same time.
Oh, I love how you said that. I just had a visual image of literally hitting those two things at the same time.
Mess up your car.
You're done.
So a large component of what I do is, you know, work on the nervous system regulation and trying to take some of the pressure off of the sexual experience so that we can revive a sense of fun and to make it more pleasure focused and less performative, because the whole idea of it being a performance and the performance anxiety that goes with that is the exact,
it's
the exact thing
anxiety.
That contributes to, you know, the problem that they're having. And so, and this is for both men and women, but you know, the more we get into our heads and the more stressed out we get, the less likely arousal is going to occur. And so it's a very paradoxical kind of backwards system. And so we need to be able to maintain low pressure. And what happens for a lot of people is that trying not to think about it or to not focus on it or to just tell themselves to relax doesn't work, because then you're just thinking about it. It's sort of like, you know, don't think about a white elephant and now that's all you're thinking about. So that's why, that's why folks will come to see someone like a sex therapist, because the things that we know to do are, it's not an intuitive thing to kind of figure this out. And the way that we figure it out is through more of a mindfulness practice.
That sounds very nice and peaceful, and it doesn't sound too scary.
I think a lot of people are surprised when they start working with me, and my practice has really evolved over the years as I've learned so much more about, you know, the mind-body connection and how much of that is a part of sexual difficulties. And so a lot of people are kind of perplexed at first when we're talking about how to regulate their breathing and developing like a mindfulness practice as a way to help their sexual health.
That's
so
powerful.
But it's really interesting when you start to learn about how those mechanisms work and how the body works, that it's not just about, you know, redirecting your attention, but it's about, you know, reconnecting to your body. And a lot of that is, you know, through... with arousal issues, it's, you know, slowing the breathing and breathing from the belly instead of breathing from a more panicky place and breathing from the chest, which is going to make arousal really difficult.
Yeah, and you bring up such a good point regarding, you know, the logical aspect of it. So kind of like redirecting your thoughts sounds very logical. I'm not going to do this, or I'm not going to focus on this. And then... in practice, it doesn't work like that. So how important it is to connect, you know, I always thought about, and it has been confirmed through my readings, this whole thinking brain and then survival brain, right? So we have this logical brain that thinks everything is logical. And then we have the survival brain that takes care of a lot of those things that are unconscious that we don't really control. And how often what we need is not to think about it, but to, you know, kind of tune into that survival instinct, which can be done through the breathing, through the body exercises, through that reconnecting and kind of being there in the moment rather than trying so much to analyze.
Yeah.
Or rationalize.
A lot of people, you know, it makes sense, are trying to sort of coach themselves to experience something in a particular way. And, unfortunately that just doesn't work. You know, one of the best things that folks can do and the way to experience more mindful sexuality is to try to really engage with and focus on the senses in the moment. And so, you know, using touch and kind of paying attention to touch in the moment and, you know, really, you know, looking at whether it's something in the room or if you're with a partner, we can use, you know, our sense of smell, and we can kind of notice, is there a scent in the room? Can you smell, you know, if your partner has a perfume on or a cologne? And just using this sensory information as a way to ground ourselves in the moment, to be more in our bodies. And so when we're doing that and we're really paying attention to the experience, by virtue of that, we're not so stuck in our heads and trying to create certain outcomes.
Mindful sexuality. I like it.
It's the best way to experience it because, you know, the alternative is what people come in for.
Yeah, completely agree. So in terms of the link between sex and intimacy, because I know that for most of us, we'd say, oh, intimacy, that's sex, foreplay, and kind of doing all those functional things. How would we go about expanding our definition of intimacy to include so much more than sex?
I have an exercise that I will often get folks started with. I call it an intimacy date because I try to use more of that like umbrella language. But like you said, a lot of people will think of sex and intimacy interchangeably, or they'll think of sex and penetration interchangeably. And there is so much more than just the script that most of us are following. And that script, if we follow that, you know, continuously, can become, you know, part of the problem. It's like, well, it's the sort of all or none thing that develops. If I don't feel like doing what we typically do, then the default will become that we don't do anything at all. And so that's where a lot of relationships can struggle and people can get stuck, is because if I don't want to do what we typically do, then they just over time stop being sexual or stop being intimate in those ways. And so what's really helpful is kind of using maybe like a weekly intimacy date as an opportunity to explore, what do I want to experience today? And so I think, you know, probably years ago, old sex therapy used to involve, you know, scheduling what they'd call maintenance sex, which now I think about it is like a horrible sounding thing. And the idea was just, you know, use it or lose it. And so just schedule it whether you want to or not, and just do it anyway. And that is definitely not where we are today, especially when we think about, you know, consent and empowerment and having agency over your body. That is really not a great way to approach it. And so, and that's part of the problem, is a lot of people are already doing that, where they're just sort of going through motions and they're on autopilot. So with the intimacy date, what I recommend is I still ask people to try on, you know, this weekly time that you schedule and you plan. You get a lot of pushback around scheduling and planning. But
right. Because then it's not sporadic, and then it's not romantic. And it's like, again, that script that we have, that this should just be
right,
so easy.
Exactly.
You should have to schedule this.
I'll just say, is so normal to have to sort of carve out time or space for it. And our lives are just so chaotic and scheduled and busy. And so if we don't create priority and sort of carve out some time and space for it, for a lot of people, it just starts to fall off, and repeatedly falls off, until it becomes something that, hey, we are not doing this very often. And a lot of people are troubled by that. So, some people will use, you know, it feels, you know, unnatural, or it feels too planned or scheduled. Other folks will look at it as a ritual, as, you know, a time to connect, as a date. And so, you know, looking at it from mm-hmm. that more positive lens, that this is an opportunity. And even if you're not thrilled with the idea of planning, it's something to just try. You don't have to do it, but it's something that maybe is worth giving a try. And so the idea is that you still schedule some time together, maybe let's say half an hour once a week, but rather than the old, like, we're going to schedule sex and we know we're going to just go through this script, it's an opportunity to actually have some, you know, brief dialogue, and to use the context of the day and where you are in that time and place to decide what fits for you in that moment. And so the idea is, the focus is on pleasure, and the focus is on connecting with a partner, if you're partnered. And so, you know, kind of constructing the script, so to speak, in the moment based on what fits for you on that given day. And so that disrupts the all or none piece that seems to get attached to it. So I may be, you know, no to this thing, but I could be a yes to this other thing. And so I will provide my clients a list of just different ideas. And it's everything from, you know, take a bath or shower together, or do some massaging, or just cuddle naked in bed. And it can be, you know, any of these things, anything that brings you a sense of connection, anything that feels good. And so making it flexible like that and allowing people to kind of decide in the moment what fits best for them is a way to honor that weekly date. And so that's how we sort of expand the definition, because they are intentionally calling it, you know, that's their intimacy.
Right. And I love how that's a shift from that all or nothing, we're either having or not having sex and that's it, to here's a whole spectrum of things that we could be doing that are intimate, that can increase that intimacy. And if it leads to sex, great. And if it doesn't, that's fine as well. But when we start to think in those black and white, then we're definitely creating a problem for ourselves.
Right.
When we don't meet our standards,
again, you know, for the mind body piece, is we're not tuning into our body and where we are and what we need. And so, or if we are, we're doing it in that sort of black and white way again and saying, oh, I'm tired, so forget it. And, you know, usually if you, if you make it really flexible, there's not many circumstances where you can't show up and do something. And that can be, you know, lying in bed together. It doesn't have to necessarily be any one thing. And so you can pay attention to your body and pay attention to what it needs and pay attention to what would feel good and to, you know, try that.
Right. And so these are some great examples for partners, but I'm wondering how we can increase our intimacy with ourselves if we don't have a partner at the moment.
That as I was talking about, it's like, this doesn't apply to some folks who may not have a partner. And so, which is totally, totally okay.
Which is okay.
For folks who want to explore their sexuality and their bodies and sensuality, that can include things like, you know, taking a bath on your own. And, you know, it can include self-stimulation. It can include, you know, applying lotion to our bodies and just connecting to the body and exploring sensual touch. And it can be done in other ways. There's a lot of folks who, you know, really want more physical touch in their lives and maybe don't have a partner and are kind of grappling with ways to include more physical touch. And so, you know, we can do physical touch for ourselves through, you know, like the lotion or, self-pleasuring. And then there's other ways that, you know, they may not be intimate in the same way as maybe, you know, being with somebody that you're close to, but doing things that involve touch, like going for massage therapy or, other, you know, healing touch practices or, you know, spending, you know, more time being physically close with friends and family. So there's ways that we can bring some of that into our lives from, maybe not a sexual place, but from the physical touch, perspective. And for some of us, that's really what we're yearning for and needing. So, you know, there's different ways that we can go about getting those needs met.
Yeah, I completely agree. I have a client who's single and often she just says, can I just hug you? I just need to be hugged right now. And I've got my kids and I've got, everything's okay, but I'm seeking some of that physical comfort. And you look so kind. Can you hug me?
we're a lot of us are hungry for touch and yearning for more touch. We're not getting enough of the touch that, you know, our bodies might need. And touch is so healing. And when our skin touches someone else's skin, and it's a safe environment, that releases oxytocin. And that's a hormone that's naturally produced that helps us to feel bonded and secure. And it's just a really important thing that we have touch in our lives. And I hear some people who will tell me, you know, that they don't need touch, they don't like touch, they don't want touch. And, you know, if that's the case, it's always kind of interesting to unpack that and explore that a little bit further. a lot of the folks that I see who have lower desire for sex, if touch has usually been more of that all or none thing, what can happen is that people will start to shy away from physical touch if they don't want it to lead to sexual touch. And so they'll start to see sort of all touch as an invitation for being sexual. And so that all or none component kind of creeps in. And so some folks will discover that it's not that they don't want touch, but they don't want, you know, to start touching in a way that may invite other types of touch that they're maybe not interested in.
Right. And that also kind of leads into vulnerability and this idea of I can't let myself be seen, or I can't be vulnerable in this space, space. And that leads to like, no, I don't want to be touched, or I don't need touch, because that touch is, you know, kind of a segue into this vulnerable place.
And I think too, you know, it's that feeling of safety in our relationships and with the people that we're with and in the environment that we're in. And so, you know, being vulnerable in that way and, you know, accepting and inviting more touch, especially sexual touch, can be really challenging if you're not entering that space feeling regulated and calm and safe. And that's where a lot of people find themselves. Or if you had just had an argument with someone, you know, for example, a partner or someone else, it's really hard to sort of transition from, you know, one emotional space to this other emotional space. And so, you know, there's so many things that can create barriers to our intimacy.
I was just about to ask that in terms of like what prevents us from going into those places or feeling the need to put up those boundaries.
I'm currently co-authoring a book about libido. Thank you. It's mostly about, you know, folks who have low libido or folks who are in relationships where there's a mismatch between their libidos and, you know, one partner wants to be sexual more or less than the other and or in different ways and sort of how to navigate that. And it's going to be a whole book because there's so many things that influence our sexuality. And so, you know, one of the things that I like to do is have people kind of map out all of the different things that are kind of in their world and affecting them at any given point in time. Because a lot of people will think, you know, well, I'm just like, you know, I'm not into it, or maybe something's wrong with my relationship, or maybe there's something wrong with me. As we start to map out all of the different things that are, you know, factors in their lives that that point in time, we start to, you know, kind of see all the things that are influencing it. And so, you know, stress and anxiety can be part of that. And the medications that we take can influence that. And, you know, how we're feeling in our relationships and whether we got done what we wanted to get done that day. And, you know, if there's distractions and we're thinking about other things, there's just so many layers to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and we don't think about it because we just think there's something wrong with us. So there's something wrong with this whole functioning system. There's very rarely do we stop and show ourselves some kindness for all the things that are going on.
Most of the time, it's multiple things going on. And most of the time, when we start to map that out, it just makes a lot of sense. And so it's not like something's wrong with us. It's just there's too many things going on at one time. And so, you know, even things that, you know, help to slow us down and, you know, practicing self-care and taking space to slow down and rest can really help with intimacy and sexuality because we're, you know, trying to wire and rewire, you know, slowing down and being present. And there's some research out of Canada and Dr. Lori Brado's work. And she's finding she does a lot of research with women and women's sexuality that the women, and I would imagine that this translates to men as well, that the women who have a mindfulness practice that they do in general tend to have better sexual experiences because they're able to kind of be more present in the experience. And they're practicing that on a regular basis. So you may not think that that's kind of part of sex therapy, but it ends up being something that I recommend a lot, which is to develop a mindfulness practice and to create something that you're doing routinely to kind of check in with your body and to be more, you know, present.
My heart is so happy right now hearing all of that, especially as it relates to mind, body. And you also mentioned self-care, which is where mm-hmm. I was going next, because self-care is my jam. And I was just wondering, in terms of self-care, how can sex be, one, a part of our self-care, or how important is self-care to have a good, I don't want to say healthy, mm-hmm. because obviously that's a big word to throw around, but yeah, enjoyable and pleasurable sex.
The more we can feel balanced and good and regulated, the better our experiences will be as a whole, and that includes our sexuality. You know, self-pleasuring and connecting to our bodies can help us to relieve stress. It can help us to sleep better. It releases, chemicals like, oxytocin, and there's endorphin reliefs, I believe, if I'm getting my chemicals right. And
Yes, you are.
I'm not very science-y.
I can vouch for those chemicals.
All of those things that really can help our bodies to, feel good, to feel balanced, and, it's part of our mental health and sexual health. And so it's all interconnected.
That's wonderful. I kind of touched a little on this, and I want to go back to it because I think it's something that comes up a lot. And it's this idea of what a healthy sex life looks like. This is a podcast on health, so I kind of want to dismantle this idea of what quote unquote healthy
hard
sex
to answer
looks
because
like.
It's going to vary for everyone. And I think that would be how I would define it then, is, being able to know and have an understanding of what feels good to you, what works for you, what you like, being able to communicate that to other people. And then, honoring that for yourself. So, finding ways to do the things that really speak to you, maybe setting some boundaries around the things that don't fit for you, and feeling good and well about, the things that you are doing.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like this self-determination, self-definition,
very individual,
rather than a generalized one-size-fits-all.
The traditional markers that we think of for, being good at sex or enjoying sex, it doesn't have to be any one particular way. And so, if you're someone who doesn't have orgasms and you're totally fine with that and it doesn't bother you, that's fine. That's great. If you're not and you'd like to be, maybe going to explore that a bit and see what we can do to, to help with that. So it's just sort of knowing, what fits for you, but sometimes that requires a little bit of, exploration and support before we get to the point where we, know that this is what's best for me.
Right. So you mentioned that you have a book coming up. You are amazing on Instagram. What is going on?
Yeah, I'm working with a friend of mine to write this book all about libido. And we're in the early stages. We've got a couple of chapters written. And so we're hoping that can come out in the next year or so. And it will be all about, the different factors and variables that affect our libidos. And then what are some things that people can do when they have either a relationship where there's a mismatch, or if they want to sort of explore their sexuality further. And so in the midst of working on that, and I'm hoping to include, at least some tidbits of the content on my social media, just so that people have access to some of that. And the intimacy date that I referenced today is one of the exercises that's going to be included in the book. So folks can already, kind of dabble in setting up a day and time and just keeping things really flexible.
That sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. And actually, as you were talking about that, I'm like, I'm going to go set up an intimacy date right about now with my partner and make sure great we schedule some time in there, because yeah, it's definitely one of those things that you have to make time for. Things get busy, things happen, and we really have to include sex as part of our health. It's there. We have to take care of it. It's part of our whole well-being. And I'm so thankful for this conversation that we have, for all your knowledge, for just everything mind body related that you shared,
because
it's so in line with all the things that I love and enjoy. Truly appreciate you. So grateful for your presence.
Thank you for tuning in to the Mind Meets Body podcast. If you like what you heard, make sure to hit the subscribe button below. If you're looking for more things Holistically Grace, check out my Instagram at Holistically Grace and my website, www.holisticallygrace.com. Please be mindful that the conversations found on the podcast are for educational purposes only. They're not meant to diagnose, treat, or replace the personalized care provided by a trained professional. In fact, it is my hope that these topics encourage you to reach out and seek help, no shame attached. Until next time, friends, stay compassionate.